JNM After Midnight. This week's episode, The Cinematical World of Harry Potter. Alright, and we're back with another NJNM After Midnight with the smooth voices of Ben Tyler and a special guest tonight. Don't end with just the movie review. We're here with guests Ben and Pat with two T's. A possible Gollum.
How's it going? It's good to be back.
A possible Gollum of the original host, Pat. We don't know for sure. Yeah, Pat, welcome to the fictional Chinese restaurant that we hang out at after midnight to talk about things that just can't make it into the podcast.
Cool. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, it's kind of a ripoff of the slash film After Dark, but we don't care. today's topic, anything you guys want to say before we dive right in?
No, man, it's good to be next to the microphone with Pat again after 20 episodes starting this sucker off, getting back in every now and again, maybe for a special guest appearance, right?
Yeah, I'll try and drop by every now and then.
You guys enjoying that egg drop soup I ordered?
It is tasty, sir.
Thanks. Oh, yeah, I got some fried chicken feet, too.
Yeah, it's like Never Neverland. You got to imagine the food's there, and then it really will be. Tonight's topic, I believe, is the kind of the main theme is, of course, Ben, the cosmonaut that he is, like delaying the inevitable contact with the Harry Potter franchise. And he's just recently, this past month or so, dove into every single film and then went and saw the final released movie, Deathly Hallows Part 2. And we're kind of here to just kind of pick his brain, see what the experiment, resulted in, if he dug the franchise, if he's going to read some books. So, Ben, what were your let's start from the beginning. Like, 2000, I guess, the first movie came out. People went ape shit, or wizard shit, or whatever you're going to call it. And, people were just talking about this nonstop. The books were being tagged as demonic by some groups.
Yeah.
Some were being claimed as like a return to reading for children, because children up until like had been very computer based almost, although they are now, but like, you know, a return to reading is always good to see, regardless of I may not say regardless of content, but a child friendly content. If they're reading, that's good, basically.
Sure. And
burning books is like the worst human act against literature that you can perform.
Sure.
Growing in the 2000s, I guess, like, what did you choose not to do anything with Harry Potter, or did you say, no, I'm going to wait from, like, the Sorcerer's Stone was released, and you're like, no, I'm going to wait till all 7, 8 movies are going to come out, and then
no.
I'll watch them?
No, it honestly was just kind of ambivalence in the beginning. I didn't have any interest in it, and it was something that my younger sister had kind of latched onto, and just automatically from that, I kind of assumed that it was more, you know, children's fare than stuff that I was willing to deal with, you know, back in the year 2001 when I was, whatever, 16 at the time. I was like, oh, no, I'm much too old for that. Like, this, you know, this seems like more of a young adult type of deal that I didn't feel comfortable putting myself in that category. So I just didn't really care about it. And then later on, after especially the third movie came out, and you started hearing the kind of more critical praise of everything and how the series is actually getting really good and stuff like that, I started to have like just a slight interest in it. And then by the time, you know, Goblet of Fire and the rest of them came in the later years, I was like, all right, now I know that I want to watch all these, but I'm just going to wait until the final one comes out, because there's nothing worse than catching up with a series and then having to wait along with everybody else for the new ones, just because you've just gone through this whole period of catching up and you feel like, a really special relationship to this series or show or movie or whatever it is, series of books or whatnot. And then you're just back to kind of square one of having to wait with everybody else. So I just wanted to avoid that for myself. And I knew that it was a finite series. So I was just like, all right, that's what I'm going
to
do.
Now, did illiteracy have anything to do with your avoidance of the Harry Potter series?
No, it didn't, no.
Okay. Pat, what's your background with the franchise? Were you a wizard back in the day?
No, I never read the books. Still to this day, have not read a single one. I had some little cousins that were into it. So it became sort of a Thanksgiving tradition when, you know, these movies would come out. I think they started when they first came out. That's when they would come out.
Yeah.
And whenever we would go visit them, you know, I just made it sort of like a bonding experience with my cousins to go see the movie. So that's how I never had like this sort of goal to not see any of them. I just sort of haphazardly watched them. And then by maybe the third one, I was like, okay, however far this goes, I need to like see it through. So
yes. And yeah. And you, Tyler?
Yeah, that was like me and the Trancers. I'm slowly making my way to Trancers. Yeah, it was kind of different for me because I went and saw, like, I hadn't really been aware of the kind of the surge in popularity that Harry Potter had until the movie came out. And the movie came out, and I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty badass. Like, just kind of the fantasy about it. It hadn't really gotten dark yet. Like, that was kind of one of the first two, I guess, were less dark than what became the series mm-hmm. as they grew older, grew darker. But, yeah, like, I went and saw the movie. Yeah, I guess it was around Thanksgiving, Christmas, so I was off from school. And I ended up reading the first, second, and third book in, like, that Christmas break. Because mm-hmm. they're really easy reads. So, like, basically I was at the point where I was starting to get involved. And, yeah, it was just one of those movies that, like, you can draw a lot of themes from. Like, you know, any – and it's kind of interesting to compare, like, this generation's Harry Potter was like the last generation's Star Wars, which was the generations before that, like Tolkien or right. whatever you want to do with it. And, you know, it's just, you know, an adventure that was just kind of exciting to see on film. And then, you know, if you have the right kind of patience and imagination, you can read it and kind of see what the movie's going to be like in, you know, in your mind before it even comes out in the theaters.
Yeah, I'm glad you made the Star Wars comparison because there are a ton of them in this series. You know, it's the whole kind of archetypical, like, or archetypal, as
yeah.
you mentioned in the most recent episode of the podcast that we just recorded, 52.
Pitch Black.
It's kind of a, you know, it's the archetypal hero's journey, like this kid kind of pulled from obscurity who's got this really terrible life and doesn't really know the brilliance that he's going to attain one day and kind of you know, the greatness that he can live up to. So it's really kind of an inspiring thing. And
yeah,
and
I never enjoyed that aspect that he was destined to do all this stuff. I don't like stories like that. I like stories that are like self-made man. Like, you may be thrown into a certain situation, but like the rest is up to you. Like, there's no like secret powers that you have or anything like that.
So you didn't think... I mean,
yeah, if we go back to Star Wars, like, yeah, sure, Luke Skywalker, he was thrown in this situation, and I guess he was destined, and, you know, that's a completely different story, I guess. But he, you know, he trained... Well, okay, now I'm going down a road that would be counter-argued pretty adamantly, everything I say. So, yeah, I guess... Yeah, I just... Maybe I didn't like the actor that played the destined character.
You're not a fan of Daniel Radcliffe.
Well, Radcliffe, he did all right, but he did get very pouty and moody in the later films, especially, you know, the character, I guess, it called for it, where his friends were trying to help him out. Like, his friends and these people that he now, like, considered him part of their family, like, he completely, like, shluffed them off constantly because he was like, oh, this is between me and Voldemort and all this stuff. So it kind of got pretty emo. But I guess if you look at it as a whole, that's not really something to nitpick on.
So Tyler, you said you kind of read the books. Did you read the books as they came out, or?
Well, yeah, I caught up with I think the first three had been out, and then when Goblet of Fire came out, that's when I started going and getting the book. Like, I wasn't crazy about it. Like,
yeah.
I wasn't waiting in line or anything. Like, I would just go
to
Walmart and buy it at, like, they had would have like a whole just palette of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I started buying them. The only one that I didn't read right away was the seventh one. Like, the seventh one came and went, and I never read it.
Uh huh.
And then I read it last year, right before the movie came out. So
this sort of I guess you can still answer this question, but how yeah. did like, because me and Ben can't really answer this because it doesn't pertain to us, but how did the movies live up to what you read in the book? Because I guess at a certain point, the movies have sort of given you, you already have like a sense of what the movie's going to be with the first three, but, you know, those last four or whatever, how did they live up to what you read in the book?
I mean, God forbid they do anything outside of what's in the book, but I think they did a good job of taking what was important and putting them onto film, because clearly we can't do a page-by-page, screen-by-screen shot of an entire book that's 700 pages long. So there are a couple things that are not in the movies, like subplots or things like that. Or, you know, like in the recent one, I think people had a problem with which characters were on screen when in the book, like, they were supposed to be different characters during that same scene. It's just kind of like little stuff like that that they, for some reason, may not get right, or they chose not to do it that way for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like, as far as what was going on in the book and the characters that were featured, yeah, they stayed pretty true. I mean, you have to with that popular books. Ben, like, so you watched the first seven, I guess, in a pretty short span of time. Did you notice that perhaps, like, I haven't seen seven or eight, the eight of them straight through. Did you find any, like, common themes? Or, like, was it kind of a straight shot through the movies? Did they all look the same, or did they have different feels? And did you feel like one movie didn't fit in with the whole series or something?
I mean, they definitely have a little bit of a commonality, but there's also, like, Karan's movie, the Prisoner of Azkaban, like, is such a huge departure from the first two, because Chris Columbus directed the first two movies, and he's, you know, known for, like, Home Alone and stuff like that, you know, like, family-friendly stuff, and that's kind of what the first two movies are to some degree. Karan just kind of added this darkness to the series that I think really inspired the whole rest of it as far as, like, visually and the kind of tone. I think David Yates, I'm pretty sure, with the exception of Mike Newell, who actually directed Prince of Persia, that you and I talked about recently, Tyler. David Yates kind of directed Order of the Phoenix all the way through the rest of them.
Yeah.
So, so, you know, it helps that one guy kind of has his own vision, I guess, for how to wrap the series up. But I don't know. I mean, do I like different eras of Harry Potter better? I think yes. I think the middle section in Order of the Phoenix in particular was my favorite of the movies up until the very last one that just came out in theaters, Deathly Hallows Part 2. That one, as it stands right now, is my favorite of the series. But I really enjoyed Order of the Phoenix. I thought that one was, it was actually written by a different guy. Michael Goldenberg wrote Order of the Phoenix, and a guy named Steve Kloves wrote every single other one. And I, up until that point, I was like, I feel like these are not written as well as they could have been. And I didn't know how much of that could be attributed to J.K. Rowling and how much of that could be attributed to Steve Kloves. And then when I saw Order of the Phoenix and it was written by another guy, I was like, there's something special about this movie that feels a little bit different. And I really think it was the writer. And then Kloves kind of returned to wrap up the rest of the series. And I wish Michael Goldenberg would have had a chance to kind of leave more of a mark on it, because I think he did a really great job with Order of the Phoenix. But the final movie is definitely my favorite. Pat, do you have a favorite out of them?
Do I have a favorite? That's a good question. I would say no.
I hate them all.
No. To clarify, I think I like some equally as others. And what happened was, when Ben was going through, watching these for the first time, I was going through and watching them for, you know, second, third, even fourth time for some of them. And
with Warhammer?
I definitely... What's that?
Nothing, never mind.
I definitely enjoyed... I still enjoy the third one. That was my favorite for a long time. I don't think it is anymore, just because I like the Order of the Phoenix. And then I like it more so than I did when I originally saw it. And then the sixth one, Half-Blood Prince, I like that one. I didn't sit through the whole film of that, but from what I saw, I enjoyed that one more than I can remember initially seeing it as well.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I guess the final two movies, I guess part one and two of Deathly Hallows, I'd probably need to watch again to sort of judge them fairly against
settle it in the can.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I kind of know that part one, and maybe we all can agree on this, part one is definitely just, it's of Deathly Hallows, is just, it's clearly an introduction.
Yeah. It's pure setup.
Oh yeah, I think it's supposed to be one movie, basically. I don't know if they're going to combine it for the DVD or something.
Well, yeah, and if they do that, it'll be great. But as it stands now, it's almost like a indie Harry Potter movie, like,
right?
Just based on like emotion and whining, and nothing happens in it. So.
They're just like wandering through different locales, like woods.
Yeah.
Rock quarries and different things like
Although it had some nice moments. Like it, I had read kind of your thoughts, Ben, on that first one. Like the fifth and sixth ones were just so action packed.
Yeah.
That it was, and you kind of like, as someone who's read the books, like the movies got so kind of overwhelmed by the action and the stuff that was happening that, like, in the first movie and the second ones, kind of, you had a chance to kind of see the kind of the splendor of this world, like the people that had taken the time to like design the architecture and design the, you know, whatever, the costumes and the locales and stuff. I thought part one of the Deathly Hallows was kind of a nice look at kind of, you know, it was sweeping like cliffs and stuff like that. But you also had a chance like to look at the village. I can't remember the name of the village now. Godric's Hollow. The place where, Potters lived.
Yeah.
And just kind of like little small kind of, and you have these characters, these three characters that are, you know, if it had just been part two, let's say, like it went from six to part two and we missed part one for some reason, like you would have these characters like, you know, Ron, Hermione, and Harry fighting the whole time, you know, getting blown to bits, and then the movie would end. I think part one kind of gave like the audience like one last glimpse into this three-person relationship, and kind of like, you know, almost like a soulful look at the characters before getting into the, you know, the battle scenes and the epic fireballs
kind of
and stuff like that.
So you're saying it was like the calm before the storm?
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. But yeah, and again, it was kind of a nice slow. The movie was slow and kind of boring because nothing really happens. It's more of just like point and click, find out information.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, if they combined the two movies, I think it would be a little better because you would have both that slow part and that build up and then the epic ending, but whatever. Can't very well come out with like a 5-hour movie and expect people to sit there an entire day. I think my favorite one was probably Goblet of Fire, maybe Sorcerer's Stone, because I like the introduction to the world. Like, I always dig movies. Like, that's why Fellowship of the Ring is my favorite in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, because it's kind of an introduction into the world and what's going on and stuff like that.
Yeah, the whole Goblet of Fire, I mean, I'm surprised that you said that may be your favorite, because that one, I think I... And again, it's been like a little, like 2 months or something since I've seen this. So, and because I watched them in such quick succession, there's a lot of bleed over between them. So I may be wrong about this, but pretty sure that's the one with all of the, like the Triwizard Tournament stuff.
Yeah. Well, hell yeah, man.
And I think that stuff is like totally worthless in the grand scheme of the Harry Potter universe, because it doesn't matter. Like, nothing, none of that matters. Harry's not even supposed to be in that in the first place.
Right.
He kind of gets called in, you know, at this last second, like, whatever, the chooser of the, you know, his name gets put in for him or something like that, right? And he gets, like, chosen somehow, and there's no stakes to it, really. I mean, you've got the kind of tragic death of Cedric Diggory at the very end of the movie, and that is like the real, I think that's the first appearance of Voldemort as we know him for the rest of the series.
Well, that's kind of the reasoning behind it, because the Voldemort arc, I guess if you want to call it, hadn't really come about yet.
Yeah.
Like, they had warded him off twice, so they were like,
sure.
They didn't really know, like, when he was coming back, so, like, a Triwizard Tournament was kind of the plot before, and I think it was kind of a cool twist that turned into, like, especially in the book, I guess, that whole thing turns into what the rest of the series is going to be about.
Yeah. Yeah, and I really liked the beginning of I really liked the beginning of that movie and also the end of it, but as soon as Voldemort kind of appears in that form in the Ralph Fiennes.
You don't pronounce the S?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it's
Fiennes.
I don't think so. I think it's Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes. This is his Mexican counterpart.
And as soon as he appears, and the whole rest of the movie is awesome, and like the return to, you know, when Harry kind of like teleports their body with the goblet itself, and it, you know, they drop back on the field of the Triwizard Tournament, and you've got like the whole school there cheering, and then they all realize that he's dead. That's like a horrifying moment. Yeah. It's a great way to end the movie, and like you said, set up the way that Harry, because he never really. Harry as a character really never lets that go for the whole rest of the series. You know, like he feels responsible for that. And that's kind of what you're talking about earlier, where, you know, he does kind of, he takes a lot of it on his own shoulders because he is destined and he is, you know, all this stuff has been kind of, laid out for him. And he is like the only person that's able to defeat Voldemort. And all of that I thought was really nicely wrapped up in the very final movie in Deathly Hallows Part 2 when the big reveal comes that the reason that the lightning scar is on Harry's head is because Voldemort trapped one of the, you know, the last Horcrux basically is Harry, you know, like the part of Voldemort himself is inside.
He didn't even know it.
Yeah, which is pretty awesome.
Spoiler alert.
The whole thing is very, it's very cyclical and kind of... you know, it is epic storytelling for any story that spreads out over, you know, you said that one of those books is 700 pages. So, you know, average 600 pages, let's say, for 7 books, like that's a massive story. And for anybody to create a world like that, you have massive challenges bringing that to the big screen. I think this whole series is really awesome. Like when you take a look at what they were able to accomplish and how you could bring this, even with different directors and stuff, bring it to an audience and have everybody, have all the story essentially be, you know, followable, for lack of a better term, all the way through from the beginning to the end. You have little stylistic flourishes here and there in different movies with different directors, but it's the same story all the way through. It's the same characters, and I don't know. I think it's probably one of the better, like, franchises, you know, film franchises ever made, I think.
Star Wars is pretty good.
But can you really say that with the prequels in the mix?
No.
Okay, that's all I wanted. That's all I wanted.
I'm not going to lie, I really missed Richard Harris through this series. I preferred him.
I did too.
I mean, I really liked the guy, what was his name? Something G, it starts with a G.
Michael Gambon.
I liked him, yeah.
Yeah, I liked him, but I really thought friggin' Harris, just that was the character, man.
And maybe that's because that's who we started with, but,
yeah.
You know, I liked them both by the end, definitely.
Yeah. Like, he just seemed old enough and brittle enough to, like, fool you for the first 5 movies and then come back and, like, beat it out, although he did not live to be that.
Yeah.
That old. Although I liked him as English Bob and Unforgiven too.
Speaking of spoilers, let's do it.
Let's spoil this entire franchise.
No. Well, I was just gonna ask Ben because I think Tyler, you might be excluded from this having read the books. But going so long, and I can give you my answer as well because I didn't read the books. But going so long, like not seeing anything, not really knowing anything about Harry Potter, was there anything spoiled? Because kind of like similar to Star Wars, you know, I'm sure everyone's heard Luke, I Am Your Father at this point. Big spoiler alert out there if you haven't.
Yeah, make it easy.
And there's stuff like that in Harry Potter. So my question is, did you sort of have any of those like spoiler alerts where you were like,
I know one specifically that I did to him.
Yeah, aside from a little one that I'll let Tyler talk about, there really wasn't, because I kind of stayed so far away from it. I also, as soon as I made the decision, like the conscious decision to watch all of them at once leading up to the last one. I avoided all of the trailers and everything for the new ones, so I didn't even really have images in my head of what things looked like. I did remember from before I made that decision, one of the previous movies leading up to the final ones had, like, Harry and Dumbledore up on this kind of rock in the middle of the ocean, and, like, these waves are crashing. So that was, like, one image that I had in my head. Yeah. So, like, I knew that that was going to happen at some point.
Yeah.
But I really didn't know much of anything about it, which I thought was a pretty cool way to go into it. Tyler, you want to tell them what part you were talking about?
Yeah, I think one time on the podcast we mentioned the death of Sirius Black and Gary Oldman's character.
Yeah.
And Ben did not seen any of the movies yet.
I was
planning to watch them all.
I was kind of bummed about that, to be honest, because I thought
when it happened.
Wait,
or
the spoiler or the death?
No, once the death happened,
he was a badass character.
Yeah, he's a great character, and I thought that it would be one of those things where he could be kind of resurrected somehow and, like, brought back to help Harry do his thing. But then, like, looking at the series as a whole, you realize Harry doesn't need that help. But it's just he's such a cool character that I just wanted to see him again.
Yeah. It was interesting because there was this random blog article I wrote, or I didn't write it, I read it, and it was about, like, the top, something. It was like a video, it was about video games, and it was, like, about the top something or other. And this guy said such, like, a riveting statement how in one of the games, like, your goal is to destroy what makes that world unique. And I think, like, that kind of, that quote, I'm paraphrasing, of course, like, applies to a lot of the video games he was talking about, but it also applies to, like, the Harry Potter franchise and the series, is because, like, to accelerate the story, to tell the story, you have to basically destroy everything that makes this world, like, fun to read about, or, like, you want to be there, but then, like, it needs to be destroyed, or certain people need to die.
Yeah,
to basically tell the end of this story.
Yeah, and to have conflict for the main character. I mean,
right.
Like, building those things up where the audience loves them just as much as Harry makes things more traumatic for us when those things are taken away too. So,
like a bittersweet irony.
Yeah.
Oxymoron.
Indeed.
Any last thoughts on the franchise as a whole? I mean, we're just scratching the surface here. This might lead to part two, part three, part four of the after midnight discussion of Harry Potter. But
I mean, we may return to it at one point down the line. But
Ben, a lightning round. Was it a good or bad idea to wait 10 years to watch the movies?
I thought it was a great idea.
Was it a good idea for Ben to wait 10 years to watch those movies?
I wouldn't have done it that way. But,
yeah, me neither. You're crazy, dude.
I just, you know, because I had no wait time. It was awesome. It's like a fast pass at Disney World or something.
Yeah, but you got to walk away when people start talking about it.
But that's
you're
the
like
thing.
A leper.
I didn't really retain any of those conversations from the earlier years, and then because I just had no interest, so my brain just kind of shut off when people would talk about it. And then at the point where I made the decision, I just avoided those conversations, and there really weren't too many to avoid, so I didn't feel too much like a leper.
Lightning round. Ben, is Emma Watson hotter with long hair or short hair?
I'm going to say long.
Pat.
Always long.
Short. Nice.
No.
What is this? Like, this reminds me of...
Like the McLaughlin group.
Yeah, exactly. The Dana Carvey skit from Saturday Night Live.
Hermione, long or short hair, go! Yeah.
Yeah, that's... I don't know. Tyler, what are your kind of concluding thoughts on the franchise?
Wow. 10 years I waited. I watched these movies, and I read the books, and wrote fan fiction, and... You know, it's been a riveting ride. I'm kind of sad it's over. I'm waiting for Rowling. I don't know if she's coming out with something new that adds to the universe, or maybe she'll allow, like, Scholastic to have other authors write within the universe. Like,
well, you've heard about Pottermore.
Yeah, I've heard about it, but I don't know what it's about. And I don't know if that is a continuation of, like, Harry Potter in his 40s, like, dealing with his taxes and stuff. Like, there's nothing... Like, he uses Voldemort's wand as, like, a pen to, like, Excel spreadsheets and stuff. Yeah, maybe they'll explain like some of the smaller facets of the franchise that aren't really addressed, like the fact that like medicine doesn't really play a role in some points medicine is needed. But you would think medicine would be like the first thing they'd use magic for. Like broken arms and stuff, like they had like potions, I don't know. Like those kind of small things I would like to get to know. Maybe the civilizations of wizards across the world.
Yeah.
Maybe some of that action.
Maybe that'll get explored at some point. Who knows?
Maybe Emma Watson with some shorter hair.
I don't know. Pat, any last thoughts about the franchise?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the route I took in watching it as well. I would say if you haven't seen any of them, don't hold out for any future Harry Potter that may or may not come to pass, as it were. Just see them now.
All you have is the fan fiction.
Yeah. And, you know, I guarantee, like, back when I first started watching these, I don't know, I might have been in high school or something. I thought, just probably like you guys, that they're for, you know, smaller aged kids and or lesser aged kids.
Right.
Little kids.
Yeah.
Chilling.
But, you know, as the kids matured, so did the story and what Harry goes through. And yeah. I can probably recommend it to all ages, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's a big thing, and I'm glad you mentioned that really quickly before we wrap up. Tyler, you'd ask if I had noticed anything, you know, watching them in such quick, you know, back-to-back structure. And that was something that I really picked up on, was in those earlier movies, it really was. The kids were super young, obviously, but the stories were a lot more kind of innocent. And then as the movies go on, some stuff like, you know, there's some real drama there. There's like, you know, the things have, the whole series has a lot of stakes. Characters die that you love. And
Hermione has an abortion. That doesn't happen.
It is heartbreaking material.
And
it's half goblin, and she's just like, I can't live with the shame of being pregnant with a half goblin.
She went into that bank and just boned one of the goblins.
Have you seen those goblins, man? They are hideous.
Anyway, the characters grow to kind of, yeah, grow into their, like, you know, older problems and stuff, and that's obviously because I'm coming at it from an older age now, where I really started to like love the series. Although the time travel, we gotta give a little shout out in Prisoner of Azkaban, was really sweet the way that they were able to kind of incorporate that. I'm a big fan of time travel in movies in general. So
holler.
I think the whole series is just really awesome, and I'm glad that I finally got around to watching all of it. So thanks for hosting the discussion, Tyler.
Hey, no problem. And I want to thank personally Pat for joining us once again.
I miss you so much, dude.
I'll try
and make future appearances as well.
Like, my jokes just don't fly with Ben here. He is like a totem. I don't know what that means.
I thought it was an Inception reference.
Yeah.
No, I meant like a totem pole, like the faces on a totem. Okay. But yeah, I guess we can go Inception with that.
I'm look at them to know your jokes aren't funny, basically.
I'm yeah. Spinning never-endedly on a tabletop. But,
exactly.
So, Tyler, you going to grab the check at this Chinese place or what?
Yeah, I guess. Second week in a row, you forgot your wallet, quote-unquote, again.
Right.
Maybe it was stolen out of that Sunfire.
I'll get you next week.
Yeah, I bet. Spot me for the fortune cookies. Oh, maybe we'll make Pat pay.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Pat, welcome back. Pay for our food. Yeah, I just got like, you know, six number 14s.
What is that, like $5? I'm good.
No, it's definitely like $12 each.
Okay.
That is like sides of rice and orange chicken, egg roll.
He's a hungry lad.
I am a hungry... I don't know what's Chinese for lad.
Yeah, I don't
know. But dad.